the con artist television tax man of San Diego, how one man duped the public and betrayed his clients. Part 2. Today we're picking up where we left off last week and talking about the fraud and crimes committed against clients of Uncle Doug, better known as J. Douglas Jennings. He allegedly ran a faith-based practice. Well, I think we can take allegedly out of there, can't we, Tom?
Let's just do it, please.
He ran a faith-based practice that ended up being caught and sued more times than Lindsay Lohan. We will unpack another court case while also discussing how Jennings was hiding his wealth from the authorities, including a mega-sized yacht, a million-dollar real estate property, and lots of antique silver. We'll also share the length of time Jennings and his wife Peggy got sentenced to behind bars. Ladies and gentlemen, welcome back to Tax Crime Junkies. I'm your host, Dominique, and this is my oh-so-lovable co-host, Tom. Say hello to the people, Tom.
Hey, everyone. Thanks for coming back to part 2. This guy had 2.5 decades of scheming, so we couldn't do it justice in just one episode. So we're going to wrap this up in part 2 with a real bang.
So let's dig in. On the last episode, we went over his most well-known case where he ended up getting disbarred for scheming an elderly man out of $3 million over the span of just a few years. And you would think once you're disbarred, you would learn your lesson and stop practicing as an accountant. Well, that's not the case when it comes to good old Uncle Doug.
In 2017, we learned that Jennings ended up pleading guilty to both bankruptcy fraud and tax evasion. Like many other charlatans, he played the religious theme, claiming he was a quote-unquote faith-based lawyer. He and his wife Peggy, who was big into real estate, were a team and they conspired together to scheme. She herself pled guilty to bank fraud on August 16th of that year. Among other things, she admitted she had forged her mother's signature and transferred funds into her mother's account to make it appear that the mother was rich. Well, it was another way of hiding the funds she stole with her husband, Uncle Doug.
Do you think she learned to forge her mother's signature in high school so she could get out of class and write notes?
Well, I think most of us did that, right?
Yeah, I never did it.
I never did it.
To commit some real estate fraud. Some may wonder why it took so long for the federal government to catch on to their schemes. I mean, 25 years, that's a long time. So when you consider how many court cases were opened against these two, it makes it even worse knowing that in 2013, the bankruptcy judge, who's named Louise DeCarl Adler, charged Jenning and his wife with embezzlement and or larceny in connection with fraudulent or felonious intent on a transaction. So way back in 2013, you have a completely unrelated judicial event happening, and the bankruptcy judge smelled something rotten.
Right.
And so Judge Adler said that the Jennings actions were willful and malicious, and the Adler letter was sent to the U.S. Attorney's office. So this judge took her time to actually put her thoughts down in a letter and sent it to the U.S. Attorney's office. Now, here in San Diego, Tom, we have what's called the Reader Magazine. Okay. And the Reader Magazine had a journalist team that had been following this couple's activity since it first began in the aughts, the early aughts of 2000. And a number of the people that they inquired about why he and she had not been nailed. So there's lots of information on this publicly online. I first became aware of the case when I began getting calls from his clients.
Oh, yikes.
And some of his former clients had gotten burned and were looking for help and guidance in legitimate tax planning.
Right.
And so once he pleaded guilty, he pled guilty to concealing $1.453 million in assets. Now, that's just related to the bankruptcy filing. Remember,
right.
He's settling all these cases out of court with clients that were suing him for wrongdoing, and then he goes into bankruptcy to discharge all of it. And he admitted that he owes, at that time, the IRS $5.9 million. So probably not a shocker here that he also wasn't paying his taxes during that time.
Sounds like he could have used some real tax planning, Dominique. I don't know. Upon further research of the case, we learned that this Bonnie and Clyde couple filed for bankruptcy and owed over $25 million to creditors, including banks like JPMorgan Chase and Citibank, Commerce Bank of Temecula Valley, and First Bank of Wyoming. Individual investors were also claiming money from them. He had been sued 15 times for professional negligence, six times for malpractice, and 2 times for fraud. Back in 2012, he actually started a new law firm after the original firm went bankrupt. But then they are still involved in a bankruptcy. In a case involving a property in Utah, a judge ruled that he and his wife sold an approximately 2/3 interest in the property to Ramos Properties for $1.3 million in other funds in 2004. But Uncle Doug never recorded the sale and then later conveyed 100% of the property to themselves without telling Ramos. Jennings then had the audacity to get a new loan, claiming he was the 100% owner of the property.
Well, here's Doug on his past.
I always wanted to be a professional baseball player. The Boston Red Sox were interested in me, but I wasn't any good, so
oh,
I had to
goodness.
Do something else. So,
what is this guy good at? Fraud, lying, theft. Cheating.
Yeah.
I don't think that's uncharitable.
No. No. Wow. So we have another client here that he's getting into business with, and client thinks that he's buying 2/3 of an interest in the property. And in fact, really, he gave them the money, but they really did not convey the property to
right.
him at all. Then they strip all the equity out of that property by mortgaging it.
Yeah.
And saying, hey, we're the 100% owner.
Jeez.
So even after he got busted defrauding the elderly man that we discussed in part one, remember that was Mr. Robinson. He got $3 million from him. Jennings showed a continuing lack of remorse or insight into his misconduct. And it significantly harmed his client. And to this day, holds that position.
Accountability is essential in the tax profession, in the legal profession, in the accounting profession. He doesn't have personal accountability for his actions, and I don't think that's something that can be learned. You either have it or you don't.
True. Unfortunately, it's not stamped on your forehead, I guess, for the client's sake when they're searching around. You know, in the first bankruptcy case he filed, Tom, he did something that is not surprising at all when you see his character from the past cases. He's trying to hide assets. He wants to legally get out of his debts. What'd you say, $25 million in debt? He wants a clean slate from that, but he doesn't want to give up his lifestyle. And so he hid the fact that he had a stock interest in a real estate deal that was worth $1 million. He hid his 53-foot luxury yacht that was named the Sea Eagle. And let's not forget how much he owed to the yacht docking business that he stored it at. He owed them money too. Oh, and he also hid $165,000 worth of antique silver from the authorities. Do you think they actually eat off of that silver?
No, not in prison, that's for sure, which is where they ended up, as we kind of know. Prosecutors also stated at the time Jennings owed, no surprise, the IRS almost $3 million, for tax years 2005 through 2009. Now, at first, he agreed to pay the amount, as well as penalties of over $2 million, over $1 million in interest. But then he really didn't want to pay the IRS, again, surprise, because he worked to evade payment by concealing assets in the bankruptcy case. Peggy, after pleading guilty, has agreed to pay about $145,000 restitution and a $50,000 fine.
So he's doing the same thing to the IRS, Tom, that he did to the clients that he bilked. You know, he's making a deal, I promise to pay, and then he turns around and tries to get it discharged in bankruptcy. And so wouldn't you say that's a negotiating in bad faith? In his mind, he has no intention of ever paying that.
No, never. And he wants to keep his assets and get rid of his debts. So he wants to be wealthy with no debts and just have a do-over at the expense of the law. And that's just not appropriate.
And so a lot of this came out during the bankruptcy proceedings because the judge and the trustee there felt like he was up to no good. And remember, Judge Adler took the time out to actually write a letter to send to the United States attorney and about this couple. And here's what she had to say. She says that they should be charged with embezzlement and or larceny with fraudulent and or felonious intent, and that their actions were willful and malicious, defining them as felonious, and as proceeding from an evil heart or purpose, malicious and villainous.
Oof.
That sounds like a Disney witch.
I just don't hear judges using that language in reference to people before their court. That just tells you how uniquely bad these people were, how clear their crimes were, and how brazen they were with what they were trying to do.
Yeah, the judge also charged Doug with defalcation by a fiduciary. That's just a polite way of saying he fleeced his own client. And the conduct of Jennings in his role as acting as an attorney for Ramos was particularly egregious. He owed ethical duties to his clients, but he preyed on them. And what's interesting is, you know, a lot of times when we see cases like this against wayward tax advisors, if you will, it doesn't usually include their spouse.
Spouse has no clue about what's going on.
Right. And in this case, his spouse wasn't an attorney and wasn't involved in that side of the business. She was involved in real estate, but the judge mentioned that Mrs. Peggy Jennings is equally culpable. She noted that she had 30 years in the real estate business and she knew what the two of them were up to.
Well, I don't think the Jennings were a fan of Judge Adler. They appealed the judge's decision.
Of course they did.
Of course they did. And when it went to another United States district judge, that judge affirmed the Adler decision and noted that both Doug and Peggy Jennings had committed larceny and embezzlement and that Doug had cheated his client. The judge also held that Adler was correct when she detected the telltale badges of larcenous intent. In fact, the judge also noted in a deposition, Peggy Jennings did not know or could not recall answers to counsel's questions well over 100 different times.
Isn't there a famous scene in the movie The Wolf of Wall Street where everyone who committed crimes repeated they don't recall over and over again? It sounds like Peggy was in on the same game.
Well, she was, but justice was finally served in 2018, and not just with fines and settlements. In a packed federal courtroom with Judge Gonzalo Curiel, attorney John Douglas Jennings Jr. was sentenced to 34 months in prison. His wife, Peggy, got 4 months in prison. She had been charged with bank fraud and aiding and abetting. She was ordered to pay JPMorgan Chase, $1.5 million. Her lawyer portrayed her husband as the one controlling her. The couple's $3.9 million Rancho Santa Fe home was quickly put on the market.
Houses are nice over there, Tom, but it's pretty shady. Now that we're wrapping up the full story, aside from don't steal from your clients, what are some things we can learn from this story?
There are a few things that come to mind. It's important for professionals, lawyers, accountants especially, to follow their ethical guidelines and avoid misconduct. Financial mismanagement and fraud can have serious consequences. We have to be transparent and honest at all times in financial matters, especially with the IRS. I mean, come on, that's the nature of our business. We have to honor and respect the law, and we have to accept the consequences if we don't follow the law. It's important to fully understand the terms of the contracts or the agreements that we get enter into and seek legal advice for all business matters. If people did more of their homework on who they were doing business with, I do really believe less fraud and less schemes would be imposed on the public. People need to do their due diligence. Due diligence really can go a long way. A simple internet search, a simple Google search, looking at social media reviews on Yelp or other places can give us some essential information. We have to, the public, protect ourselves and our businesses from people who want to exploit us, from those who don't have our best interests at heart. We can't simply completely delegate everything. We have to keep up with our own records. We have to review our books. We have to know what's happening. We have to understand what tax strategies are being taken. We can't simply just say, I trust this person, let them do it all, cover my eyes, cover my ears, and be blind to it. As an enrolled agent or a tax advisor, you know, the story really hits me to even focus on being even more transparent with my clients than I already am, and making sure that our clear communication shows that they can trust me, I have their best interest in mind, I tell them the way it is.
I agree. It is surprising that people don't do more research on who they're going to work with. As you said, it's so simple just to pull up an easy internet search. And when you're dealing with folks who have a professional license, you can inquire with that licensing authority as to the status of that license.
Yes.
We saw a number of Yelp reviews on Uncle Doug's Yelp page where people were saying, did you know he's disbarred? Don't go to this man. And yet people were continuing to bring their business to him. Do you think he's acting as a Andy Dufresne in prison as he's serving his time out, Tom, doing taxes for the warden?
I would hope that he would finally have given this up. You know, I mean, after he lost his law license, he went to prison. But unfortunately, white-collar criminals sometimes don't repent of their ways. So even when he gets out, there's no guarantee that that's going to stop him, which is the sad part.
And when you think of how long this case stretched on, you know, there were clearly problems and he was defrauding people in the early 2000s. That's just what we know about. Chances are it happened long before then. And so the sad part about it for himself and his wife, Peggy, is that they were in their 70s by the time they were sentenced after all these appeals and dragging their feet and trying to resist this. And so here they are spending their golden years behind bars. And that's really that's the risk that they took on, right? In trying to cover things up like that. Have you ever experienced anything like this in your career?
I have not been to federal prison, Dominique. So I But in all seriousness, sounding consistent, equitable behavior really helps to build trust with clients, with colleagues, and the public at large. Clients need to trust that their financial information will be handled with integrity. Public needs to trust in tax professionals that they'll act in an ethical manner. There are three principles that come to mind that I always try to adhere to regardless of how business is doing. The first is simply professional reputation. Unethical behavior can damage a tax professional's reputation and undermine the entire profession, right? Same thing with the Ernst & Young case we talked about episode one.
Reputation is really everything in this business because we do rely on the public trust. And once you've tainted that, that costs you everything. And sometimes, Tom, you know, that can include working with unsavory people as a client. You know, I have no doubt that there was somebody in there doing Uncle Doug's tax returns, whether it was somebody on his own staff or an outside professional. And we have to be just as careful and choosy about who we are selecting to work with. And again, Google searches, license checks, those can all be very helpful in checking and determining someone's professional reputation.
I've certainly had clients lie to me about things to try to hide things. Those clients always get terminated again. Now, some of those clients, of course, have gone on to leave negative social reviews online because they were upset that they got fired. But of course, they don't mention the fact that they actually lied to me about their tax matters.
Right.
Convenient how that happened, right?
Right. But that's where documentation comes in, yes. You know, because if we're able to, whether that's an email that's saved or a text message, or if this is getting fewer and far between because of the way that we work remotely with clients. And maybe we should talk about that. How do you get that clear communication documented when we're doing things like hosting a Zoom call or speaking on the phone? It used to be when I had clients sitting at my desk as we're completing work, anything that they're attesting to, I would document in a handwritten note and then have them sign that sheet so that I've got clear documentation of where those numbers came from. I mean, it could be as easy as just saving, getting in the habit of recording those conversations and saving that for just in case in the future.
Absolutely. Let me just go through those two other things that I was thinking about. The second one, of course, is our legal and regulatory requirements. EAs, CPAs, attorneys, we have rules and regulations that govern our practice. Failure to meet those regulations don't necessarily always lead to criminal activity, but they can create licensure problems where you can get disbarred, censured, suspended from practice, for example. And I also, the third one, last one is social responsibility. You know, kind of beyond our put on paper ethical responsibilities, we have a responsibility to the public to act in the best interest of society. And that includes acting with integrity, honesty, and fairness. And I think the best demonstration of that, frankly, is the opposite of Uncle Doug. Because he showed basically the flip side of what happens when you don't show social responsibility.
Yeah, I know that we get busy in our day-to-day lives, Tom, but we are in a unique position in the role that we play with our clients, that we see things from the 100,000 foot level all the way down to minute details. And that gives us an opportunity to look out for our clients, watch their backs. If you've got a client that's telling you that they're getting into business with their attorney, now in this case, he was their tax practitioner as well.
Right.
But I would think the flag should come up there, because
yes,
that just isn't that common. And you know now from reviewing these rules that there's very specific guidance that discuss what needs to take place in order for that to be legal. So I think we can all help our clients in a better way, just watching out for each other,
right,
and pointing things out. I often have Tax accountants tell me things like, well, you know, I'm not an insurance person. I don't sell an insurance, or I'm not an expert in asset protection. No, but we know enough in the cases that we've seen to maybe notice some things that don't seem typical.
Right.
And in that respect, I think that points back to that social responsibility, Tom. While that's not explicitly stated in our code of ethics for our tax licenses, we do have this unique perspective into our clients' lives. And that's something I certainly don't take lightly, knowing that typically we know more than sometimes their family members do.
And Dominique, that add one quick point. This is another example why most people who have a lot of planning needs really need a team of professionals to work with.
Yeah.
Because when there's a team, there's accountability, there's checks and balances.
Right.
One firm is always looking at what the other firm's doing and they're collaborating. But in this case, you know, when Jennings wants to be the one-stop shop for everything, tax preparation, tax advice, legal services, investments, that shows how the abuse can happen so easily without the client even being aware of it.
I think this also reminds me, just given some of the cases we've looked at connected to Uncle Doug, is that he really did prey on a lot of elderly people.
Yes.
Knowing as our parents are aging and we're getting to that point where confusion can set in and where it's very easy to be misled, especially by somebody in a position of authority, like an attorney, for example, we can be of help to them by taking action so that we're aware of what's happening with their finances. So I'm not saying this in the case of your clients that you're not related to, but I'm saying for family members to watch their backs.
Yes.
And make sure that they're not taken advantage of as they age. Becoming a power of attorney or just having those open conversations with them, while it's difficult, can also help protect them. And to your point, the more players you have or advisors that are working together as a team,
right,
lessens that risk that,
yes,
there's one person who can get away with it all.
Absolutely. Well, ladies and gentlemen, as always, thank you so much for everyone for listening. Take what you learned today and use the truths that hit home to transform the way that you do business. Dominique and I are grateful you decided to join us today. We hope you consider subscribing to the show and even share it with some friends who could use a Tax Crime Junkie podcast in their life. Help us spread the word and come back for more.
We learned a lot from these crimes committed by Doug Jennings, and we hope you found it fascinating while also educational. It's not every day you read about a guy hiding a yacht from the IRS. So many crimes were committed, and I'm shocked he only got 34 months in prison. He ripped people off. He lied, stole, and destroyed the lives of people who trusted him with their finances. We have to do better. And luckily, we use these stories as fuel to continue doing the right things in our practices. So thanks for tuning in to another episode of Tax Crime Junkies. Remember, as we uncover the stories of tax fraud and white-collar crime, we're not just exposing criminals, but also the loopholes in the system. We hope you'll join us again next week as we continue our mission to find the loopholes that went left and close them for good. Until next time, remember, every crime has a trail that leads to the truth.